you live. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. The Vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook were saying, we can post whatever the hell we want because it's fun and we're enjoying ourselves, and that's the way that we want Facebook to be. We don't want it to be the way that you want it to be, which is, you know, actually correcting us when we're wrong. Whatever. It also came down to a big question mark of following the idea of sometimes the journey is far more entertaining than the destination. I'm known as Shujin Tribble all over the place. You can find me pretty much everywhere and anywhere under that name. Holy, Googling my name was really eye-opening recently. Wow, it was a lot of pages. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, to a Roman Catholic family, raised on Long Island. I am now living outside of Buffalo, New York, and am an unabashed atheist. Joining on the not exactly rounded table tonight is Unrenowned Tech.
Hi, folks. UT here. Not to be confused with ST. I am not the Tribble that you are looking for. I currently reside in Southern Maryland. I was actually born in Maryland but raised in New York. I have come from a mixed religious household. I was taught, much like some of our other guests that we've had before, is that growing up, that it's okay to question things. It's okay to ask questions. It's inherent in our nature. And having that ability, not being forced to think like everybody else, but giving the chance to think for myself. Over time, I converted from being a Jew to born-again Christian. And then when I really started to think for myself, I went through and I reread the Bible, then I read several different versions of the Bible, and then I realized it's a bunch of, you know, horseshit, and that it's bloody, it's horrible, let's just put it this way. If we were to turn the Bible into a children's book, it would still be rated R.
That's a good way of putting it right about now.
It's one of the most, you know, I've read science fiction and fantasy, biographies, history, and no matter what you take from the fiction side, the nonfiction is still bloody and horrible and just downright nasty. Well, when you compare our wars and everything else to that of what's going on in the Bible, it makes some of the stuff humanity look not so bad, and that's saying a lot.
I hear that.
So because of all that, I don't believe that there is a God out there. At the very least, and I hope this is not true, I'd be willing to speculate that there is a possibility of a deity that does not have an interest in any particular person's life. Maybe because we don't know what created all of us. Science can't answer that. Religion thinks they have an answer, but they can't prove their answer, which is why I say that religion thinks they have the answer. But the fact is that nobody knows. So you can speculate all you want. And the closest speculation I'm willing to come to is that if there is a deity, it doesn't give a shit about you. It doesn't care about me. It doesn't care about any of us. And that kind of deity would scare the crap out of me. But it would scare me more if it did care and was actually willing to eternally punish somebody just because they believed in the wrong religion or the wrong prophet or they said the wrong prayer or they didn't hear the word of God, of your particular God, because they don't live where you live. So maybe they heard a different version and that version was right and yours was wrong. So now you're eternally punished even though you thought you were doing what was right.
I think there was a quote from Babylon 5 that really suits this up, and I'm quoting from Marcus Cole, and I've used the quote on many an occasion, and it's a wonderful quote. He said the following: "Wouldn't it be much worse if life were fair, and all the terrible things that happen to us come because we actually deserve them? So, now, I take comfort in the general hostility and unfairness of the universe."
I agree with that quote. I do too. I have to agree with that because if you think about it, if it really, let's say that Westboro Baptist Church is right. The reason why our soldiers are dying and that tens of thousands of children are dying from starvation every day or year or whatever the statistic is, that the tsunamis happen and the hurricanes that come through and kill people and all this bad stuff and Ebola and AIDS and everything happens, killing millions of people, is because one guy had sex with another guy and that was fair, or one woman having sex with a woman, or a guy with a goat, or a woman with a goat, or whatever the case might be, right? And I'm referencing Christian theology right now, just because most of our viewers are probably of an Abrahamic God origin, or Judeo-Christian God, however you want to reference it. Two ways to say the same thing, or slightly same thing. But the point is that if that were fair, kill me now. I don't want to be here because that's horrible.
I hear that. All right. So as tradition, I'm going to go ahead and, if you've got a suggestion on what this opening should be, drop me an email. I mean, I don't know if I want to call it a five minute freak out or whatever the hell. I mean, basically, I'm putting 5 minutes on the clock and kind of working from there, and we'll come up with whatever the answer is going to be a little bit later. Well, so today was not.
Are you aiming for like a rant kind of a block of time scheduled for what's bothering you, or satirical, or just basically whatever comes to mind?
Usually, I get an idea earlier in the day as to what's kind of going through my head. And I don't think very hard on it until I'm actually sitting here in the chair with the camera on and it just flows.
Dude, Tribbles Troubles.
I'll go with that. Why the hell not? So there you go. So courtesy of Heath and Noah, 5 minutes on the clock.
Baby in a blender.
Today was not one of those better days, unfortunately, for a couple of different things. Not the least of which is I feel like I was taken advantage of by somebody. And it's, I'm not going to discuss it because very deeply, because to be perfectly frank, part of it was my fault. A good portion of it was my fault. All I really needed to do was really say, look, my agreement was with somebody else, not with you, so I shouldn't have taken it up on myself, but be that as it may. I ended up having a problem with the little one today. And it was something that I didn't like having happened. I really didn't like it. We have a lot of days where the days are good. Minimally, that they're not bad days. But every once in a while, there comes a day where being a parent sucks. Amen. And the worst yet is being the biological parent of the person in question. Now, I say it that way because we can be parents. We can be moms and dads and guardians and not be biologically related. And that's kind of a cool thing in itself. But when you're biologically related to someone, especially if it is your direct descendant, your kid, you already know a good portion of what is going through in their heads. Because it's part of what you were at that age, give or take. So for me, when things go a certain way, I know the looks. I know the feelings. I know what it's like from the inside because it's part of who I was. Now, yeah, people will go ahead and they will say that you get half of everything that you are from your mom and half from your dad. And I get that. But it's not exactly a clean differentiation between the two. It's not a clean melding It's not a mixture exactly. It is a whole bunch of different Venn diagrams. And if you're not familiar with a Venn diagram is, wow, you really need to get out more often. Pieces overlap. There are times when you're going to be all of one and none of the other. Sometimes a big mixture of both. Sometimes neither one. And that can get really troubling. Because in those moments where you know what's going on behind the eyes, behind the blank look, behind the I am trying really hard not to get upset, you know what's going on. Because you've been there. You did it with your own parents. And you don't think about what your parents went through with you. All you can think about is what you're going through at the moment and how much it sucks. Because as much as you want to be the guiding force, the steward of a whole brand new life and a new mind, you also have to occasionally be the disciplinarian. Sometimes you have to be the one to put your foot down and say, no. Sometimes more than you really want to. And the worst part of it all is trying to do it fairly. Because how in the hell do you figure it out what that should be in the moment? It's easy afterwards to have 20/20 vision. That's easy for anybody. But in the moment, how the hell do you figure out what you're supposed to do? Parents, all of us, no matter what age, no matter what stripe, there are no true manuals for how to do it. Sure, there's the what to expect when you're expecting book, and there's the books all about what to do for your kids as they're up to 3 years or maybe even up to 5 years, and what to expect from all the different things that are going to be happening for sleep or vaccinations or how to swaddle. But how to teach that new mind a piece of what you are from those years, from that era.
It wasn't me.
How do you know what to do? So for all of you who are parents, who may be watching, who are trying to figure your way through, you're not alone. Nobody really, truly knows what the answers are in the moment. And even worse yet, before it's time to try to figure out what the answer is, we're still not even sure what the questions are to be looking for. So this is episode number 33, the subtitle of which is, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? I don't have anything special to say about the title and all for tonight. And I'll tell you why. This is the 14th of September, 2014. We are, of course, in the week for the, I don't like to use the word for it, but the anniversary of the terror attacks of New York and Washington, D.C., and Virginia, or Pennsylvania. And the idea tonight is to really, what is the harm in believing, well, stuff that's just either blatantly wrong or that you've always been taught was right, even though it's not. And nothing puts it into more stark contrast than something that I don't remember if it was something that I saw or something that I read or part of a video, but somebody had made mention to the terror bombings, the planes into buildings, and there are a couple of them that have made the circles. The American Humanist Association, for instance, put out a picture on Twitter of a glory shot of the old World Trade Center towers, with the sun streaming through it and the big text on it that said, imagine no religion. And I get that. But more importantly, I saw, again, saw, heard, read, whatever it was, one where somebody had said, the people who were involved with those flaming missiles, they were not cowards by any stretch of the imagination. They were brave. They were completely believing in what they were taught, and they were not cowards. They followed through with all of the bravery that absolute belief will give you. And I think that is arguably one of the most chilling things that I have heard in my lifetime. So that's where we're going for tonight. I don't know if there's something in particular you wanted to hit for tonight on this one, Tech, but trust me, there's plenty enough stuff to go around.
All right, so, you know, you start off with, what's the harm in believing what you're taught, whether or not it's true and whether or not it's hurtful or not hurtful to other people? I'm adding that second part myself. This is what bothers me about religion. While I do respect a person's right to believe in a religion, I will not respect the religions themselves. Because even if there is a religion out there that preaches nonviolence, they still, like Buddhism, I think it's Buddhism. Buddhism is nonviolent, and it has the concept of nirvana, correct? Or am I wrong? Am I thinking of the right one or the wrong one?
I think that you are correct.
Okay, well, if there is a Buddhist out there watching there and they're watching it while we're discussing it, throw it up on the Q&A and let me know whether I'm right or wrong. If I have the concept right or not, wrong or not. If it's the pure Buddhism believes in being able to attain nirvana, there's a little catch with that. See, if you're a woman, you can never obtain nirvana. So just because you were born with a different chromosome than me, you have no chance. Me, I have a chance, but not you. You're screwed, literally and spiritually. So I haven't heard of a single religion that treats women and men as equals and in some way, shape, or form, other than the Buddhists, nonviolence, true nonviolence. Because take Islam for an example. Islam truly is a religion of peace, as long as every single person in the world believes and practices in Islam. Yep. If every person is a Muslim, and even then, just like the Christians, there are branches of Muslims out there who say that some Muslims aren't Muslim enough, and they go and kill them, or they rape the women, or they do rape and kill them. So, yeah. What's the harm? There's the harm. Here, okay, let's do something a little less violent, a little toned down here, okay? Less killing, murder, slaughter, rape, mayhem, beheadings, and jihads, and crusades, and all that, and holocausts. You know, let's really tone it down a bit, and let's just go, what harm does it cause you in your daily life? Well, if you're Christian or Catholic, you go to church on Sundays, don't you?
True enough, typically.
Okay. And for Jews, there's temple or synagogue at night on or during the afternoon on Friday, and then sundown you have to be home and you do dinner with your family, which is probably one of the nice things about Judaism, is it does encourage families staying together and communicating and spending time with each other in that respect. That's why there's cultural Judaism, where you do the cultural practices, but you can ignore the religion, and then there's the religious aspect. So anyway, what harm does it cause in your daily life? So you're going to church or your temple or synagogue. You go for at least, depending on the service, you can go anywhere from an hour to 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. I've heard some services in some parts of the U.S. last for hours and hours and hours. In fact, they last so long, they actually provide refreshments, sandwiches and soup and whatnot. And I'm not talking soup kitchens. I mean, you sit down, have a meal, and then you go back for more services. You know, those big mega churches or whatever. They have dance parties, all that stuff. So what else could you be doing with that part of time in your life? You could be reading a book. You could be learning a new skill or a new trade or planning somebody's birthday party or planning somebody else's funeral, or you could be writing a letter to a friend that you haven't seen in a really long time, or an email, or however you want to do it. You could be going outside and playing baseball or football, or just play catch with a frisbee, or riding your bicycle. You know, you could be connecting with your neighbors, you know, outside of a religious element. There are plenty of things you could be doing rather than praying to a deity, whether or not you believe in it or not. I was reading up on Pascal's Wager, the in-depth version of it. And I understand that there's socialization in a church, but it's usually revolving around the topic of a deity. There are other things in your life going on. You know, maybe you just lost a family member. You could be using that time to go to therapy because, you know, everybody does grieve differently, but you still have to grieve in some way, shape, or form. Otherwise, your body will actually start experiencing negative side effects of not grieving. Our brains are designed with that mechanism in mind to help us cope with the loss. It's a very hard thing to do.
Before you go on, by the way, I want to hit on that one in particular, because that's something that is really, really been the idea of mental health, mental stability, grief counseling and such has been a big topic as of recent over the last, year, two?
Well, we've lost 30 major celebrities in 2014, and the year's not over yet. Yeah, I mean, when I may say major celebrities, I mean people known throughout the U.S. as well as other parts of the world.
Yeah, and especially in particular, a couple of weeks ago, Robin Williams.
And Joan Rivers. That was terrible. We lost Joan Rivers. She was in relatively good health, and it was a surgery gone wrong.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. It truly is. And I'm not belittling her at all in any way, shape, or form.
But at least she got the funeral she asked for. That can't be said about everybody.
True.
She wrote it down in a book, the people read it, and her family gave it to her.
Yep. And the thing of it is, Joan Rivers went in for surgery, relatively minor surgery, but
on her
surgery
vocal cords,
nonetheless. I'm sorry?
On her vocal cords.
Yeah.
It's not truly minor surgery. If you think about that, if it goes wrong, forget the death aspect of it. You could be not be able to talk for the rest of your life. Granted, she was towards the end of it, but her moneymaker was her talking.
Well, true enough, yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's face it, for what she did, she could have just as easily continued on for however much longer as a writer, if not.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I would have read commentary by her written in a paper.
Oh, God, yeah. But the point of it is, no, oh God, no. But the thing about it is, as you get to your older years, so-called golden years, whatever the hell you want to call it, the risks involved with having any surgery go up significantly. And I called it minor surgery because it's not like we're talking about carving open somebody's thorax and screwing around with the
it wasn't a quadruple bypass.
Yeah, exactly. Which, I mean, David Letterman, you know, we're looking at you. You better watch your ass, dude. But with Robin Williams in particular, that one hurt a lot because it was preventable. It was depression. He didn't go in to a hospital expecting to come out with, you know, improved vocal range or anything like that. He was in depression, and we found out, of course, after the fact, for a long time, and that sucks. Now, with Joan, again, I'm not downplaying it. It was complications to something that should have been relatively minor, not quadruple bypass, but still.
In comparison, to most major surgeries, it's not classified as a super major duper surgery. That's why it was performed somewhere that wasn't a hospital.
Right, exactly so. But for people that that are going through depression and feelings of loneliness, being on the outside of stuff, or even better yet, being in the religion itself and being told for whatever reason, you're bad if you've already got mood swings that could be incredibly wild. Teenagers in particular, that can happen for you. People who are going through depression because of whatever event might have happened, or even just chemical imbalances in the brain itself. You mix into that a lot of religions who go ahead and say, you are bad because you were made bad because the first person was made bad and it carried down to you. That sucks. And there's no two ways about that. That just blows. Christianity, the Genesis account says you were made bad because everybody else before you was made bad, because the first one was made bad. Although that's just the way it was intended to be. I don't quite get that one. Now, like I said, I came up through Roman Catholicism. You had a lot of basis with Judaism. Is there a similar analog to the whole original sin, fallen man thing on the Judaism side?
Well, don't forget, in Judaism, they don't accept Jesus Christ as a Lord and Savior. They're predominantly Old Testament, the Torah, as well. Believe it or not, there's actually, to the people who are listening to this, if you have any Jewish friends who are active in their in the Jewish faith, okay, that actually go to temple or synagogue, they will tell you, can ask them about this. And there is this very large book. I mean, this thing is huge. And what it does is, this is not the religious text. It is a book that explains every little aspect of the religious text. It's a companion book, and it's gigantic. I forget the name of it, but it basically explains the Torah.
Wait a minute. Are you basically telling me that the Cliff Notes version of the Torah is like 14 times bigger than the Torah itself?
Oh God, this thing's huge, dude. Yeah. I don't know if it's 14 times bigger, but it's huge.
I'm going for the effect. Yes.
Yeah, you're going for effect, but I can't actually give you a ratio. The thing is it's very large, and it basically breaks down and explains everything bit by bit. And but the point is that you're basically, Judaism is Old Testament God, okay? You have to understand that there is there's Adam and Eve, they ate the apple. There's no Jesus Christ as a savior. There is the that's why there's Passover and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is Jewish day of atonement. It's actually kind of cool in one respect, is whereas in Catholicism you have Lent. Lent, if I remember correctly, is 30 days of giving up one thing.
Right,
really enjoy.
Yeah, and traditionally, it's not really that big an imposition. People, from what I had seen, people will give up stupid things like, I'm not going to have chocolate. It's just one piece of chocolate.
I want to see those assholes give up their cell phones.
Ooh, now you're asking for, oh, wow.
Or better yet, let's see Amish Wolverine shave his beard for 30 days.
Wow, that's cruel. Wow.
I had to find a way to get it in there. Anyway, now Yom Kippur, from sun up to sundown, you fast. You can have water, but no food. You are not allowed to work. That means you cannot do laundry. You cannot go to work. You cannot get on your computer. In fact, the updated version means no electricity should be in use either. No lights. No radio, no nothing. You're supposed to spend the whole day reflecting on what you have sinned over between the time of now and the last Yom Kippur, last time you did this, and all this, you're supposed to catalog all your sins in there mentally, and pray for forgiveness that you truly ask for forgiveness. You're supposed to feel that you have done wrong, and you are truly asking for to be forgiven. You are being sincere. And when you've done this, and you've felt that you've gone through the whole list, that you haven't missed anything, if there's still time between sunup and sundown, then you spend the time reading the book. What happens is at sundown, now a lot of people prep the day before for this.
Right.
At sundown, when the sun has gone down, the family gets together and they all have a big feast. There's apples, there's honey, there's white fish, gevilte fish, there's all sorts of stuff. And let me tell you this, folks, even if you're not Jewish, if you have a Jewish friend and they're having a get together and they have libations, go. Jewish food is really, really good. The food alone, you know, just go and enjoy the food. This is one thing I want to really stipulate. Judaism is if a friend invites you to go to temple or synagogue with them, and whether you're an atheist or not, just go for the experience. And you'll be welcome. You don't have to wear the yarmulke. If you do and you're a non-believer, they take it as a sign of you showing them respect. Okay?
Really? Okay, yes. Now wait a second.
If you're not Jewish, if you're Catholic, if you're an atheist, if you're a Muslim, whatever the case might be, you're going into a temple or synagogue with your Jewish friend and you decide to put on the yarmulke, that means that you're just showing them respect. It doesn't mean that you're a believer. Okay.
If you're a believer,
you're supposed to wear it.
Well, yeah. Because I mean, if there's one thing that we've learned, religion's got everything to do with the funky hats. So okay, I got you.
But that's the point. You know, you don't have to wear it. But if you do, and they understand that you're not a believer, you're showing them respect, and they will in turn be a little bit more respectful to you. Over that fact, they'll be a little bit more tolerant of you, of the fact that you're not of their faith. But you still have these old traditions, like the menorah is a celebration of the oil lasting 8 days instead of 1 day for when the men went out and then they came back, late. The old traditions, in theory, the sacrifices, they still hold true. So, you know, if you go through the Old Testament and you just completely skip the Jesus Christ stuff, you know, of all the New Testament and all that crap, a lot of that stuff is still holds true. It depends on how... whether you're Orthodox Jew, that's why you see guys who haven't cut their hair or they haven't cut the ends of their beards. The Muslims have going for them too. Yeah. There's all sorts of stuff.
There's a number. All right. Let's see if I remember, because this has come up in a podcast recently.
Now don't forget, when I was brought up in a mixed household, I wasn't forced to practice all the religious nuances of Judaism or Catholicism. Okay. I was taught some of the major aspects, and we did things like the Yom Kippur, which, by the way, one thing that Judaism has going for itself that Christianity doesn't, guess what? In the Jewish faith, they can talk directly to the big guy. They don't need a third-party mediator.
Okay, that's fine.
Anyway, that's a little joke my mom likes to put out there.
Which, if we're going to be fair, as somebody who grew up in the Roman Catholic stuff, I always thought it was curious, and I thought that it was kind of a mama's boy kind of thing, that we Italians, because, you know, the Roman Catholic, the Italians, we talk to mom. We talk to the mom to talk to the kid. So Roman Catholics, a lot of time you would be making your entreaties to Mary, the Son of God, the Son of the Mother of Jesus.
Mother of God. Right.
Which again, like I said, you're basically saying, hey, you're his mom. Can't you talk to him on my behalf? Oh, I'd be happy to go ahead and do that to you, but, you know, he doesn't really call anymore. He's not a bad guy, but yeah.
So the big thing is, I wasn't steeped in it. I wasn't a firm believer in Judaism. I was taught a lot of the cultural aspects of it, the major religious aspects of it, and we practiced some of them, but not all of them. So I could never ever be classified at any point in my life as a Orthodox Jew. And Orthodox Jews are the just to give you an idea of the difference between the Orthodox and the unorthodox Jews. An unorthodox Jew will actually eat bacon. They see the concepts, the rules, instructions in the Torah as being written for the times. For example, if you're in a hot desert environment and you eat meat and then you drink milk, that is going to curdle in your stomach. And if you're experiencing vomiting or diarrhea in a desert environment and you do not have a source of water, you will die.
That, yeah, you're screwed.
Exactly. Here's another thing, okay? Back then, in these old times, before technology, okay, even 300 years ago, even 200 years ago, before our technology came around for ways of making meats safer to eat. Mm-hmm. Eating pork, that was you were flipping a coin with your life. You really were. Okay. Because depending on what animal it was, what kind of hoofed animal it was, and where the meat was coming from on that animal, you were taking a real risk at getting some kind of parasite or major bacterial whatever. Once again, in bad environments, that's deadly. That's why there's kosher butchering laws, in the Jewish kosher butchering laws. In fact, if you ever have a friend who happens to be a kosher butcher, and the world goes to hell in a handbasket, mm-hmm. and all the technology is gone, stay with that person. That person has the knowledge and skills to live a longer life while still enjoying a hamburger, because they know what cuts of the cow would be safer to eat than others when you don't have the technology to purify and cleanse the meats. That's why you can, yeah. The Orthodox, on the other hand, see it as a spiritual impurities. If you eat bacon, if you eat pork loin, you're actually spiritually tainting yourself. You know, they don't see it as an instructional in terms of safety standards. They see it as instructional for your soul.
And that's something that's really, really kind of been important for me to pay attention to. We've heard on many an occasion, and by we, I mean just lots of folks have heard on many occasions the idea that maybe the major tenets of the various religions were good ideas put into practice that prevented bad things from happening for folks at a time when the technology was far, far and away under what's available currently. And, I mean, to a certain degree, I can understand that. To a certain degree. The biggest problem, of course, is once you go that route, how far back are you allowed to extrapolate between just what should otherwise have been common sense, maybe, to a certain degree, versus the real word of whatever godling.
All right, let's stick with Christianity and Catholicism at the moment, just because that's our biggest target group at this point.
And the familiarity that we've both got.
Right, between the two of us. You know, if we had Witchy here, we could throw in
the J-dubs.
Yeah, exactly. But with them, you know, you hear a lot of the extreme or fundamental or however you want to reference them, but the very vocal aspect of the Christian Catholic community saying homosexuality is a sin. But they shave their beards, they wear mixed cloth, they eat shellfish, and they say, well, that doesn't apply, you know, because that, you know, we don't, you know, that doesn't matter. Just like, you know, the Bible said slavery is okay. Well, that was for a different time. It's like, well, wait a minute. If all this was written at the same time, and you're ignoring the parts about slavery, because we've determined slavery to be a bad thing. If you're ignoring the parts about mixed fabrics to be a bad thing, because in some cases it's a good thing, in some cases it's a bad thing. It depends on the environment that you're going to be in. Truly. We're skipping the part about the beard. Why are you not skipping the part about homosexuality? Well, homosexuality is a sin. Well, so is eating shellfish. Is cutting your beard.
And this gets to be even more fun, because there is an Italian tradition.
By the way, that ties into what's the harm? Mm-hmm. What's the harm is, you know, you're stepping on the freedoms and rights of other people because you're choosing to take this little piece of the Bible here, and you're willing to ignore this section, but this section you're willing to apply, and then this section over here that you say still applies demands that you force this on other people. Otherwise, you're not being a good Christian, even though you're ignoring these pieces over here. There's the harm. The harm is that all these religions demand that you go out and tell other people that they are bad people, that they are wrong, that they are sinful, they're going to hell, or they're going to wherever it is that their religion says they're not going to go, that they are going to or not going to go because of whatever reasons. The religions demand that you enforce yours beliefs on other people. There is the harm. You want to believe it and you choose to keep it to yourself, you're not harming anybody. But these religions don't demand that you don't keep it to yourself. That's why atheists speak out against the whole under God on the money, or under God in one nation under God, indivisible, in the Pledge of Allegiance. Or the Gideons dropping off Bibles at a local high school, or elementary school, or whatever it was. They got in trouble for that, though. But that's where the harm comes in. The harm doesn't come from you believing that religion. The harm comes in following the instructions that tell you to do harm to other people, even though you don't see it as being harmful. And if you want to see the kind of harm that Catholicism can bring, go study the Crusades.
Yep.
And if you want to see the kind of harm that Islam can bring to people, well, in Quran 47:4, do not hanker for peace with infidels. Behead them when you catch them. And I think we've all watched the current news recently about beheadings. And then, of course, we have the anniversary of 9/11. You know, don't tell people that, oh, my religion is peaceful. Okay, if you're a Buddhist, maybe. But even then, if you're a woman, why the hell would you believe any of this shit?
Yeah, and we're gonna touch on that in a couple of moments. What I was going to mention before for the Italians is, traditionally, now I don't know how wide this goes, but traditionally in my family, Christmas Eve, I think it was Christmas Eve, would traditionally be a big fish feast. So you had clams, you had linguine and clam sauce, scallops with macaroni, you had whatever fish could have been snapper, could have been fluke that you were able to get from local, because I mean we were down the New York City metro.
Did you have shrimp?
Oh God, yeah. Oh, but because it was expensive, not very often.
Yeah, but you know what?
I know. Oh, yeah. I know.
The shellfish.
Getting there. But it was a good tradition because it was a lot of good food. Now, the harm is, truth be told, I don't know what harm there was for the tradition that we ran with. However, the harm came from all those times that we never read the Bible. As part of the Catholics, you went into church, and it was, an hour, 45, 50 minutes. And I knew that because every once in a while I would be, there's a big clock in the big wall over there. What's it saying? Are we done yet? I don't know. Are we done? Oh, the handshake is coming up. Good. We're almost done. All right. We're almost ready to go home. But the only time
that you learned, feel the love and the spirit of Jesus.
The only time that you learned about the Bible was in Sunday schools for kids, which, let's face it, everything's watered down because, and when the readings came up during the Mass itself, during the church service. And it was never explained. It was never talked through. You should really read your Bible. It was always expected that you would have one, but you would never read through it. And had we actually done that with any semblance of wanting to follow what was actually told of us, we wouldn't have had clams. We wouldn't have had scallops. We wouldn't have had anything except for fish that had little swimmy fins on the sides and scales, because that's what you're supposed to have, which would mean no eel either, because best of my recollection, they don't exactly have scales per se.
I don't know about your eel, so I can't confirm on that one.
All right.
Sorry.
But the biggest problem of it, the harm to me, was that we were intentionally kept in the dark, because culturally you didn't read your Bible. I mean, you had one, of course, but you didn't read the Bible. What do you got to read the Bible for? But yet if we had, we could have learned these are all the things that go into the religion that you've been signed up and promised into, which is a whole other piece in and of itself, but we'll get to that in a minute. But because of that, you don't read the damn Bible. So you don't know what actually went into it. You don't get to see how crazy both of the accounts of Genesis are. You don't get to see, okay, Adam and Eve had three boys, and where are the girls? Oh, did we have incest with mommy before we had girls? Because a real literal interpretation could be taken that way. And then, of course, you've got the whole incest thing, and, well, we know from genetics that that's bad, okay? Bad.
No, actually, believe it or not, and I know people out here are going to either rip the YouTube comments or my Twitter feed, which, you know what? Go ahead. It's at @unrenowned_tech. There was a time in human history where our... And I don't mean R by the United States standards. I mean in human history.
Right, the 200 and some odd thousand years that we've been
a species. But I'm talking about times when people still lived in castles and there were monarchies and kingdoms. Royalty would actually intermingle. Cousins would marry, things like that. And what it was is, their thoughts were that they were preserving their bloodlines by keeping them pure.
Right.
Now, while it did have the propensity for brain disorders, neurological diseases, all sorts of nasty stuff,
yeah,
there was also another side effect that was documented. Certain kinds of levels of intelligence were retained rather than thinned out and reinforced in many cases for the bloodline. Certain propensities for certain kinds of skills were retained, and that's why it wasn't thought of as a bad thing. If there is a controlled level, let's say we got to the point of where we could design, we could go in and say, okay, you know, husband and well, I'm going to use husband and wife because right now it's technically sure. The most common. Sure. Husband and wife wants to go in. They want to have a baby. He's given the scientist his sperm. She's given the scientist their egg. And they go, okay, now here's the genetic code. Now, if we tweak this, they're going to have blue eyes. We tweak this, they're going to have red eyes. Tweak this, have green eyes. We tweak this, and while their eyes will be light sensitive during the day and they'll probably be forced to wear some kind of lens that will help dim the sunlight or any bright outdoor light. At right. night, they'll have great vision, or we can reverse it, really crippling their night vision, but they're going to have great day vision that nobody can compete with. So when it comes to outdoor sports, you know, they're going to have a neck up on watching high moving projectiles like basketballs or hockey pucks, you know, whatever the case might be. So we get to the point of where we could literally design our own kids. We go, okay, well, you know, we want to retain his family side where they have Mensa level intelligence. And so make sure that this key genome is switched on. Okay. That's different at that point. And at that point, you're talking about literally going in and manipulating the stuff. But the only way for them to do anything like that back then was literally incest.
It's called selective breeding. And right. that's something that's been used in agriculture for millennia.
Oh, yeah, and we've done it with livestock, too.
Yep.
There have definitely been livestock that were interbred, incestuously bred, so that they would retain a particular trait, whether it was give more milk or leaner meat or a better fur coat.
Yep.
The problem is that we have a superiority complex. So we don't see ourselves as an animal.
Right. Okay.
That's
what I was gonna, what I was going to dovetail onto that is, and if people think that this is not happening currently, you should really take a look at the lineage charts for various thoroughbred racehorses.
Oh yeah.
And you will see that they are backbred through their own family line several times over, usually with a sire and a dam. Those are the terms for the father and the mother. Sire is a dad. The dam is the mother. And you will see, if you go looking back through these things several times over, the generations are still from the same sire and dam and breeding back through, and it happens.
Yeah. It happens. In many cases, they're artificially inseminated as well.
Right. Right. But even so, it's still a matter of selective breeding on our part. It's artificially induced.
It was on Cosmos. Artificially induced evolution?
Something like that.
Artificial selection.
Yeah.
Artificial selection, that's what they call it, versus natural selection, where nature does the work. Right. But if you think about it, if we're part of nature and we're doing the selecting for them, technically isn't that still natural selection?
Ooh. No,
mind twist.
But come back to that. The idea of what you just mentioned, though, is pretty much the big linchpin of the whole damn thing. When you believe in religious tenets, one of the biggest one traditionally, and I don't know if it holds for all religions. I don't think it holds for all religions, but there are several that it do, that it does. I can talk.
You can grammar.
really, pretty much. But the point is, there are a number, if not most, religions that do have as part of their thing. This is it. We're the right one, and anybody else that says otherwise, they need to be converted to believe with us and act appropriately, or we'll just kick them out and to the side and find a really shallow grave for them somewhere.
You know, honestly, I've heard from a lot of people who believe in Catholicism or Christianity who say, oh no, you know, a lot of this stuff's outdated. It's, you know, you should live a life of peace. You should love one another. Even if they don't believe the same thing you do, you should still treat them like a brother and sister, which, you know, considering how my sister and I grew up, somebody's going to get a black eye. but the point is if it really is truly outdated, if it really is outdated as they say it is, why don't they just rewrite the damn thing? Nix out all that horrible crap about raping and pillaging and murdering and just get rid of that stuff, the shellfish, and say, listen, this is the new version. A lot of this stuff was applied for an old time with old values. The new values are love one another, peace and harmony, may balance find you, and go ahead and eat that shrimp as long as it didn't come from the Gulf of Mexico shortly after the oil spill.
Right. Now, that
because
also...
Because that's just a good idea not to eat it when that happened.
Right. Now, again, that brings up another piece of it all. What's the harm in believing something that isn't true, i.e. a religion? First off, of course, as mentioned, you can just put your time and energy into something that's just wrong on many levels. But what you just talked about, what you hit on, is exactly right. What's the harm in having a religion is that you completely cut off any opportunity for exploration, because your holy book, whatever holy book it is, that's it. That is the end-all be-all of all discovery. Doesn't matter what it is. Whereas when you are not held on to a religion, you're free and available to go wherever, see whoever, talk to whomever, and learn as much as possible, and then help piece it together afterwards. Nothing at all, huh?
It's a cluster. I'm sorry, folks. I hope we don't get an R rating for this, but it's a clusterfuck. It really is. Yeah. When you have, throughout the world, over 40,000 different variations, whether they're minor or major, is immaterial. Even if it's just a couple different sentences, over 40,000 variations of Christianity, just... We're talking just one religion here.
Yep.
Out of all the major religions. And each and every one of those minor variations say, I'm right, those other ones are wrong. Well, come on, guys.
Yep.
Do a group team huddle and figure this stuff out. Because last time you guys did it, there was war. It was holy war. You guys were killing each other off. The Catholic Church had to get together with all the various ones saying, no, you're right, no, you're right, or no, I'm right, you're wrong, no, I'm right, you're wrong, well, you're a blasphemer, and we're going to do holy war and all this other crap. And they finally realized that they were killing themselves to the point of almost causing extinction of the believers of that particular religion. And that they had to come together and say, listen, all right, we're going to agree to disagree. End of story. We need to stop fighting ourselves, and we need to go over here and fight the Jews, or we need to come over here and fight followers of Islam, the Muslims, or we need to fight the Buddhists, or we need to fight the Taoists, or the Taoists, or the Hindus, or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They had to agree to disagree so they would stop killing each other.
Yeah, and that's
the Muslims haven't figured that part out yet. They will get there eventually. Hopefully they won't take out the rest of us, because now they're doing what the Catholics and Christians went through, except we have more advanced technology and better ways to kill each other than they did. Back then it was swords and shields. We have guns and bullets and tanks and bombs and nuclear weaponry and
exactly.
Didn't have that back then.
Right, and that's one of the things that still to this day boggles my mind. For the Christians, no matter what bend, for the Christians, you would typically have a trust in, a belief in Jesus of Nazareth, the literary character of God, of sorts, and the idea was that you are part of the one, and anybody that is not part of your group deserves death. And in some cases, even your kids, because you need to put your trust and your faith in that God, or Worse yet, because you've got a disagreement with your kid because of reasons. And really, is that worth?
Look at the Knights Templars during the Crusades. They ransacked and killed and pillaged anywhere that they that was not a holy Catholic area or group of believers. But in some cases, if somebody dared to question, not all of them, but just some of them, right? Even if they were considered to be Catholics and believers, the Templars would have no problems with hitting them with a boot or a gauntlet or striking them down for questioning them, because how dare you question me? You know, I'm a warrior of, you know,
of God.
Exactly. So, like I said, they went through a growing pains where if they had more advanced weaponry, the stuff we have today, I think the world would have burned back then. I really do. They would not have had back then. Their mentality was so strong that I honestly feel that they would not have had a problem dropping an atomic warhead on another country. You know, just literally putting it on horseback, riding it over, pulling the detonator switch themselves, you know, suicide bomb. They wouldn't have a qualm with it, the Crusaders. They were that fanatical back then.
Yep.
That's why we had the Crusades. That's part of it anyway. But and the Muslims are going the fanatical Muslims, not all Muslims. I know there are peaceful Muslims out there. I have met them. I've talked to them. I have made friends with some of them. I have one that's in a group hangout on Google Hangouts that I converse with on occasion. You know, when I have a certain particular question about the faith, she doesn't keep the same hours that I do, so you know we don't always talk. But you know, there are fanatics of any kind of faith. And what's the harm in believing something, even if it's wrong? The harm is that you don't know that the person next door is a fanatic. Now you're teaching something that you say, oh, listen, we don't pay attention to these sections of the Bible here in the Old Testament because they were written for older times. We only pay attention to this part about homosexuality because, well, there's still homosexuality, you know. And then you've taught this person the same thing that you've learned because that's what your belief has told you to do. This person's a fanatic. And they're going, well, wait a minute. I'm reading this, and this person's cherry-picking. No, no, no. I am going to follow this. I am going to rape and pillage and murder and everything else because that's what the rest of this book does. There was a lady down in the South who decided to go home after hearing the story about what was the guy's name in the Bible, the one who took his son out to be sacrificed because he heard the word of God telling him to cut out the heart of his son?
I'm pretty sure it was Job.
Okay, Job. Her preacher or priest or whatever told the story, part of the story of Job and what to take away from it. Well, she heard the story all right, and she went home and she slaughtered her kids.
Yep. Seven.
Not one.
Six out of seven, if I remember right.
Huh?
There was it might have been somebody else, but I'm vaguely remembering six out of seven or some such.
Are you? I'm talking about where she actually took a knife and.
You know what? Bottom line, it doesn't really matter how many. The fact is, it happened to at least one.
Right. The bottom line is you don't know what the person next to you is thinking. That person next to you could be a hair's breadth away from slaughtering you just because you have a different skin color or you've cut your beard off your face. And even though you don't think this section of the Bible applies, that person's you know enough of a true believer that they're looking at you with daggers in their eyes.
And sometimes literally in their hands. Yeah. Thank you, folks, for listening into Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. We're about an hour into the 90-minute show, or at least hopefully roughly 90 minutes. I am Shujin Tribble. As you saw, Unreno Tech is joining us and just pulled up through the drive-thru at the moment.
Joe.
Welcome to Joe. Thanks for joining us, man.
Sorry, kind of lost track of time.
Well, go ahead and intro yourself.
What's her name?
Do your formal intro and get it out of the way.
Hi, everybody. Name's Joe. this feels weird. Born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, to a Roman Catholic family. Spent 8 years in the military, currently living in Pittsburgh as a graphic designer and an atheist.
There you go. So we've got roughly a half an hour to go in the show. We might go a little bit longer, but if you've got questions, please, by all means, take advantage of the Q&A system that is on the page here for the Google Hangouts. If you would like to fire over an email to me or a tweet for whatever reason, you can send it over to shujintribble@gmail.com or on Twitter, it's @shujintribble. If you would like to be added to the call this evening, yeah, you can go ahead and you can ask me. I mean, I'm in a bad enough mood right now where, you know, I'll give it a shot.
I'm sorry.
You need to have a camera and, of course, a microphone, and, you know, kind of take it from there. So let's cover something that's weird. The biggest harm that I have known for religion as an entire entity is the attempted subjugation of everyone else to conform to whatever religion. The idea is that for the Christians, it's in the book that you're supposed to convert or kill. In some cases, not even convert. For some of the passages of the Quran, it also says pretty much the same thing: convert or kill.
Well, that's what kind of sucks is that the Quran is actually two parts. There was the original revelation that Muhammad had, which forms the first part. Mm-hmm. The second part, I can't remember if it was Muhammad's brother or somebody that converted to Christianity and created this big schism in their group. At the time, it was a tribe or house, whatever you want to call it, their clan, whatever. And it was after that point that you started seeing the second part. And for a long time, people followed the first part. For a long time, I forget which empires it were. But there were a lot of Islamic empires from predating Rome all the way up to the Ottomans, where they did not have a problem with other religions. If they conquered your territory, they had no problem with you practicing your own religion. The only thing they asked was that you abided by their laws, their legal laws. There was still a separation between secular and non-secular law back then. You know, so long as you paid your taxes, obeyed their laws, they had no problem with you practicing whatever religion you want. And that was really the golden age of the Islamic empires, because that's when you start seeing stuff like algebra and navigation and trade and all these different fields being expanded on, because they had that open mindset. They were the kind of people that were like, yes, come to our schools. We don't care who you are. We don't care where you're from or what you practice. Come to our schools. Learn. Maybe we can learn something from you. And for a long time, that was the way things were, up until, you know, one knucklehead got real overzealous about the entire thing and ruined it for everybody, pretty much.
It was actually referenced in an episode of the latest Cosmo, hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. And what was really funny about that is the day after that episode aired, when you looked at the religious fundamentalist websites, they were screaming bloody murder that somebody would dare say that Islam was the forefront of technology and science. and they tried to make it sound like we were claiming that it was happening today rather than the past. Yeah.
The funniest part about this is what you had described is accurate. And for anyone who's ever used the expression that we hold in our I've said something similar to this before, and I can't even quote ownership of this one. We hold in our hands, in our pockets, 10 times the possible knowledge that ever could have possibly existed at the Library of Babylon.
Did you buy iCraft?
No. I got the new Samsung S5. Okay. But the Library of Babylon was an amazing crossroads, not just of culture, but of science and technology and learning. And exchanging of ideas. Joe, you had more.
Let's do the short version. Is we have a vast repository of human knowledge that is both globally accessible and searchable.
Yes, Joe.
Yeah. Here's the thing, and you see this with almost every single civilization. And I don't mean civilization as in, you know, a kingdom or an empire or something like that. I'm talking about an entire way of life over a wide variety of people. You see steps from creation to, you know, fundamentalism in hopes of unifying the group, and then, you know, golden age. For example, the Greeks. When the Greeks started, you know, they started just like anybody else. They started as backwards barbarians, and then they had their warring periods where they were fighting amongst each other, and then, you know, they had their golden age where democracy had been developed and, you know, military strategy had been expanded on, especially when the Persians were attacking. Unfortunately, there is, of course, a fourth portion to this cycle, which is the decline. The Greeks had their own. They started, once they had eliminated their opponents, they started fighting amongst each other again, and then they got absorbed. Macedonians. Alexander was their golden age. Yeah, he conquered a lot of places, but he expanded learning, he expanded the infrastructure of his empire, and he made life better for the people in his empire, both the original and those he had conquered. Except for the ones that, you know, ticked him off. But unfortunately, after he died, the people that took over after him again started bickering amongst each other and ripped it apart.
Yeah, and this is where it gets to be both the part to the topic and the antithesis to the topic as well, where these groups, these civilizations, these cultures, they started off what we would otherwise think of as poorly and eventually came to understanding and learned new stuff, explored into whatever, made the information available to each other after having learned more right stuff, and then eventually more bad stuff came into the equation and started ripping it apart. The various dogmatic ideas, and I'm going against religion for a moment, but dogmatic ideas in general, no matter what they come from, whether it's a religion or otherwise, causes the problem.
Yeah,
and that's where the harms come in, when you have to deal with, it's my way or the highway, and there is no middle ground, and there is no room for exploration of ideas. You stay the course, and you go wherever that takes you. Unfortunately,
see, this is where I've noticed another pattern relating to what I pointed out before. In any civilization, the majority of the people, and I'm talking 90%, if not more, are fairly moderate, both in in intellect and in education, but also in their ideals, their fundamentals. That, you know, they're not the type of people that on a whim are going to go out and chop each other's heads off because you know, their God told them to.
Their demeanor.
Yeah. But then you have the other 10%, and I'm not sure what this balance would be, but I'm going to go ahead and give it 50-50. I'm going to say 5% are the true fanatics, the believe or die kind of people, and then you have the 5% that are the truly highly educated individuals. And those are the two that are constantly vying for control throughout these civilizations. For a while with the Greeks, you saw the philosophers and the scientists had control of, you know, a lot of the Greek culture and politics up until, you know, the fundamentalists got in control and said, no, all this stuff that had been going on before, this is an affront. This has to stop. And you see that in a lot of different places. You see it with the Romans, though Romans had other issues. You see it with the Christians. Because, you know, after Rome fell, Christianity was still fairly united. And, you know, you saw the birth, you saw the uprising of Charlemagne, of the French states throughout Central Europe, and the Germanic states, and, you know, people were getting along for a short period of time up until, oh, well, we've got heresy. And, you know, purging began, and you start seeing the Dark Ages. And when they ran out of people to purge here, they started attacking each other. And then, of course, you know, the church unified them against what they saw as an affront over in the Middle East.
And even before you get to that, Tech, I know full well that you know the answer to this one. Who was it that was the big problem child? Who was it that was scaring everybody that you never expected?
Barney, the purple dinosaur. That purple
bastard. I'm still going to hurt you. I swear to you. I'm going to kill you worse than... I'm going wasn't to kill you worse than an African gray, all right?
Wasn't it Pope Innocent?
Come on, Tech. Put it out there. Put it out there properly. You know the right answer.
I hate that fucker.
Come on. Focus, Tech. Focus.
Oh, what are we talking about again?
Nobody expects
the Spanish Inquisition.
Thank you. God damn it.
Well, that came a little later, but what I was getting to was that you now see this with the Islamic nations of the world. For, you know,
oh my God.
Once they started, they were warring amongst each other and such, but then they coalesced and they got into that golden age, and people were happy. People from all walks of life, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, everybody was happy there. Until the powers that be, the powers that held control of the politics and the infrastructure, the scientific and reason-minded individuals, were pretty much overthrown by the fundamentalists, who said, well, all of this is an affront. We have to undo this. And it's been a downward spiral ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. See, one of the things that is, to me, vitally important for any culture to continue to operate for the betterment of everyone is the concept that if you are the overseeing group, no matter what title you want to put onto it, whether you want to call it a government or the warlord, whatever the case may be, if you are the one who is centrally in charge, centrally in power, to my ideals, what you should be working towards is making sure that everything is... Oh God, how do I properly say this? I'm sorry, I'm really tired, and like I said, I had a highly emotional day, so I'm a little fuzzy in the head. That you keep the cultural aspect as neutral as possible, so that everyone has a fair shake at getting their ideas out there into the open, and let everyone work off of a level playing field. I've used this analogy before, level playing field. And everybody gets the opportunity of putting their information out there so that nobody's got a high or a low point. Because once you start tipping towards any way, you put an imbalance artificially into the system that will then cause bad things to happen, because some group might feel slighted when they're really not being. Like we have now, where the Christians are being told, you need to be playing with a level playing field and stop power grabbing, even though you've been doing it for 70 years, you shouldn't have been in the first place, and now we're going to slap your hand and put you back where you're supposed to be. Oh, but it's not supposed to be that way. And the idea that people are entitled to those pieces is also yet another harm that can come. You believe that you're supposed to be entitled to these things for whatever stupid reason, and you think that you're supposed to have that power, and you're really not. Tech, you're smirking and you're smiling. I'm figuring that you've got something that you wanted to drop in, too.
No, I have something I want to close with, though.
Okay, we're almost there. Yeah. Still got a little bit yet. Joe?
Trying to remember exactly what was on my mind.
Yeah, sorry about that.
To extrapolate on what you were just going over, for anybody in power, if it's not in the common good and the common interest, it's wrong. If you have 90 people, and by the edicts of your beliefs, you feel that 60 of those people need to be killed because they're going against what you believe, and of the remaining 40, half of them are only, you know, going along with you because they don't want to be killed. Not because they believe what you believe, probably isn't something the people are doing or wrong. Probably something you are doing is wrong.
Yeah, might makes right is a really piss poor excuse for trying to say you should be doing what I'm telling you to because I have a bigger gun or sword or sling. Or chokehold, or whatever. It's not conducive, because in the short term you breed resentment, and then there's fighting when there's a power vacuum. Not that we haven't seen that happen in the Middle East recently. I mean, that would be completely wrong. Joe, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I believe it was the. Let's see if I remember it. Wasn't it the USS Abraham Lincoln? Am I thinking of the right ship that what's his butt flew into and said, "Hey, everything's good now."
Oh, you're talking Bush?
I wasn't going to go naming names or anything, but sure, yeah, we'll go with that.
Oh, darn. I actually don't know what ship he was on when
Tech,
he
did do you that. Remember?
No, I don't. Otherwise, I would have chimed in.
No, because you're tight enough. You're kind of being held down by your beard and everything. Keeping to hold that up is just weighs you down so much. You'd be tired at this time. Right?
I was actually trying to find something. That's all.
Yes, you are correct. He was on the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going around and beating people with a stick. Is not a good thing to do.
Yeah, and an aircraft carrier is an awfully big stick.
Yes, is true. It's also been described as a self-licking ice cream cone, but we can talk about that another time. You've never.
The self-licking ice cream cone. I just had a mental image of an ice cream cone trying to lick itself like a dog.
Yeah, I understand.
But the cone got in the way.
Yeah, I will explain off the air what that's all about. Because there's a little bit of a story behind that, and I'm not going to go pissing off people who've got very large things that go whoosh, oh, boom. I really don't want to do that. Talk about it afterwards. But the thing about this whole piece is that, oddly enough, it's not religion that's necessarily the problem.
Yeah.
It is... because it's been written into the bylaws, if you will.
I have a perfect example of how religions are the problem. And there's a little girl who holds up a sign. She's pictured all over the internet. I know people have made modifications to the sign. But on one side it says, according to religion... Now, mind you, this is a cute, adorable little girl.
Okay.
I am broken, flawed, sinful, dumb, weak, nothing. Now, that applies to pretty much any Judeo-Christian or God. Religion. Now, according to science, I am full of wonder, smart, a great learner, beautiful, and have potential for greatness. Which do you think is damaging? And while science is not perfect, science does not start with a presupposition of you are sinful. No, it starts with the presupposition of let's ask a question and then let's work towards finding the answer using the scientific method and other tools that we have at our disposal. And those tools are used, and different tools are used depending on what it is we're trying to find out. It's like when we try to, when we use carbon dating. Carbon dating is only useful for some things. There's radioactive dating. I forget the technical terms for these things. But where they check for certain types of isotopes and breakdown and things like that. There's different forms for different things that we're trying to find out. That's what science has given us. Science has given us our cell phones. It's given us Facebook. It's given us sodas and coffee. Well, not coffee.
But, it's given us Google Hangouts.
It's given us Google Hangouts. It has given us satellites in orbit that allow us to convey information from one side of the planet to the other within seconds. Okay, it has allowed us to go to the moon, to send machines to Mars, to send a science lab to a comet. It was comet or was it an asteroid?
No, you're right. There's been a couple of them that have been doing exactly that kind of thing.
Well, the most recent one that's getting ready to land anyway. But the point is that science has given us lots of wonderful things. And just like any tool, just like a hammer, it can be used to hurt, it can be used to kill, okay? Just like flying a plane into a building, the planes were designed to fly from one part of the planet to the next. But because somebody thought, because they were raised in a particular religious environment, they were brought up to believe that their religion was the one true faith, they were brought up to believe that it is the word of God. They decided that they were going to teach the infidels the error of their way by committing mass murder. And really, you know what? That's the harm in believing something without proof, is that you get the ones that you don't want believing this stuff because they have no self-control. They have no firewall. They have no filter. The harm is that religions are inherently, the majority of religions on this planet are harmful. They teach you to be a supplicant. They teach you to be a slave to the words written in their books that their preachers teach, whether they're fundamentalists, whether they're extremists, or whether they're pacifists. Doesn't matter. You are required to believe that person when they preach to you or demand of you. You know, there are people who in parts of the world are willingly strapping bombs to their children because they believe that that's what their God demands of them. I'm sorry, but if there is a God, a Judeo-Christian God, and he were to appear before me and say, listen, next time your son comes into town, you must kill him. And, you know, whether it's any method I think of or whether it's any method that the God demands, I would turn to that omnipotent being and go, tell him to go fuck himself. I will never do it. I will burn in your hell for all eternity before I kill my own child. And you know what? I am more moral than that God has ever been at that point. Even if it was just a quote-unquote test, bullshit. The only way you pass that test is by choosing not to ever kill your child.
Joe?
Don't get me wrong. Overzealous fundamentalism and radicalism are evil. They are sins. They are the most grievous of sins. And to say that science, in contrast to religion, isn't without sin, oh no. We've got plenty on our plate as well. But the biggest sin and the biggest problem, the biggest cause of these things, when you look at something like 9/11 happening, or, you know, it's turning the blind eye. It's indifference. Indifference is the greatest evil, because indifference is what allows these people to do as they please and harm so many. And you, when you look the other way, when you choose not to do something about this, it doesn't matter if you're the 5% of the highly educated individuals that I mentioned before. I'm talking about the 90%. I'm not saying that you're not educated or that you don't care, but that you just don't do anything, that you feel like you have no power to do anything. That's the biggest problem with a lot of issues that we have. You know, these politicians that we keep electing into offices that they don't deserve to be in, they are not qualified to be in, and they are completely corrupt when they are in them. It is because people look at it and think, well, I only have the option of, you know, this candidate or this candidate, and, you know, if I vote for anybody else, I'm throwing my vote away, or maybe I just won't vote because, oh well, as you know, it'll sort itself out. No. This is something where you have to step up and do something about it, because one voice is not going to change anything. 100 million voices will make a change. Indifference is the biggest evil in the world. And to quote Edmund Burke, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is the indifference of good men.
And therein lies where one of the biggest challenges to any civilization, any culture comes to. The idea that we have got so many people that we, even though the concept, the terminology is new, the concept is not crowdsourcing. Any good civilization is by nature learning, expanding the scientific knowledge, expanding what is known through crowdsourcing, groups of people who are actually trying to figure out what something is, why it is, how does it operate, how doesn't it operate, and what can you use with that? And that's one of the greatest goods. Ideology is the absolute antithesis to it. No matter what trappings it wears, no matter what pointy hat it wears, no matter what color loafer it's got slipped on, or what the chair is that it's made out of that it sits in, ideology is the earmark, the absolute red flag of harm. Because if you can't change what direction you're going in, if you are unwilling to change what direction you're going in, you will constantly be battering against anything and everything that's in front of you without the benefit of being able to say, maybe this isn't the right way to go. And it could be for any one of a host of different reasons. But with any luck, maybe you don't have to bang your head against a mountain every damn time something needs to be changed. So with that, we're going to go ahead and we're going to call it a night. As always, Tech, thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Glad to be here. Sorry I couldn't make it last week. But at the same time, it was time well spent with my son. I do want to close with something here, so let me turn on the screen share. Where the hell is it? Control room, hangout, screen share. There we go.
Assuming it works.
Full screen, right? Yep, there we go. All right. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, for full effect, for those of you watching, instead of reading it, just close your eyes and listen to what I have to say and how I say it all the way through, and you'll know when I'm done. He is everywhere, in the heavens and earth. He makes the stars shine, yet he cannot be seen. He is noble, abundant, and fills the universe. He can lift you into the sky and bring you down gently. He can take many forms. He can help heal. He can help kill. He can help create, and he can help destroy. Praise be unto he, Helium.
You mispronounced it. It was H-E.
Yes, but that's the point. The point is that up until the very last... Why is screen share not turning off here?
You need to re-click on the icon again.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the little panel to open up on the left. There we go.
It is.
Okay, great. The point is up until the very last moment, for somebody who has never seen that, for somebody who's never read that or heard that, up until I said the very last word, that could have easily been misinterpreted as me praising their deity. Okay? Now, if all it takes to change that perception is one word at the end, because he, the capital letter H and the lowercase e, is how we write helium on the periodic table.
Well, it's shorthand for helium.
Exactly. If all it takes is one word to change your entire perception of all those sentences I read, imagine a religious holy text that's advertised as the exact word of God having gone through unknown amounts of translations, unknown amounts of revisions with unknown authors. Now you tell me, you still think that stuff's true?
Thanks, man. And Joe, even though running late, thanks for being able to make the time with us, man. Really do appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just kind of got wrapped up in things over here, but I'm glad.
So what's your name?
Work.
That's funny. I know that one.
All I can say is, like I said before, folks, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And I know that good outweighs evil in this world. Don't ever think that you don't have any chance of changing things if you do nothing, then nothing will happen. If you do something, you could start a revolution. Do something.
And that's something that I've said on many, many occasions. I cannot change the world. Let me back up. One of the things that I came to saying after losing my wife was that if I see how well I can remember, because I haven't said it in a long time. If I thought for an instant that it would change anything, I would become the harbinger of pain and the destroyer of civilizations. I would be worse. I would make Hitler look like a failed Girl Scout and never look back in shame. If I thought it would make any difference at all. I believe, probably erroneously so, but I believe that were there a multiverse of infinite possible parallel universes, that there is at least one where my doppelganger has done exactly that. All for the hope to have destroyed cancer one way or another, all on his own.
Flamethrower.
If only it were that simple. We want good. We want there to be good, and we want it to be able to suffuse the entirety of this planet. Never mind our own civilizations. Never mind our own culture, our own country, our own state, county, town, or home. What really makes the difference is little nudges. Do your own little bit. Just your own little bit. Nudge your own life. Show yourself as a light for how you want things to be. Do a kind deed. Give a handshake. Ask somebody, are you okay? It doesn't have to be a grand piece. You don't have to go out there and earn a Nobel Prize. Sometimes all you can do is just be that one person that makes one change happen.
Thank you.
Look up what the butterfly effect is. And Joe, real quick.
Think of it this way. Show kindness to two people. Be one voice to two people. And who knows? Maybe each of those might be a voice to two people. And then each of those a voice to two people. And so on and so on. And maybe it propagates. And what started as two is now 2 million. In a very quick period of time.
We've seen this in social media now, which is an amazing innovation for our species. But bottom line, even without it, just do right. Again, it doesn't need to be a huge piece. It just needs to be that little piece in your little piece of the world. We don't have many opportunities to go around. Try to do the right thing. And things work out. I'm not saying anything about karma. I'm saying if you want to keep the harm to a minimum, do what's right. Follow through with what is known, what is shown to be the right thing, and then just go with it. Who knows? You may even be the one voice that was necessary to have prevented a cultural icon from thinking that he wasn't worthy. As always, everyone, thank you very much for your time. We greatly appreciate it. We know full well that this is not a sexy vlogcast, but we do believe, and that's the reason why we keep doing it, that what we've got to say is ultimately worthwhile for at least somebody. Our next scheduled show is going to be a week from now, the 21st of September. I'm going to put out the word to a couple of folks to see if we can have somebody on the show again. Our good wishes go out to Witchy Bunny, who is probably not going to be joining us for the foreseeable future due to work. Dallin was having problems with his computer, so with any luck, he'll be back. But again, I'm going to be putting out the word to a couple of folks and see if we can get a guest on the show again, potentially two. We'll see where it takes us. As always, if you have comments, questions, or ideas for us, you can send me emails, shujintribble@gmail.com. You can follow me over on G+, Twitter, Facebook. The list goes on and on and on. And, of course, as you see on the screen over here, if you'd like to leave a voicemail message for us, please feel free to do so at 859-HCTV-554. That's 859, damn it, I had it over here, 4288-554. Yes, I have it written down over here. It's a long story.
Hey, you know, I do have amusing for you. Google has recently updated their Hangout system to incorporate Google Voice. I wonder if they've made it. This is something that we'll have to experiment with at some point in time as to whether somebody can call into a video Hangout with voice only, because that would definitely make it much easier for people to get live on this stream.
Oh, yes, and believe me, I'm looking forward to that, and I keep looking for it. I don't have that yet available, but as soon as we can...
Oh, you didn't get the update yet?
As soon as we can get that to work, we will make that work, because I want that to be the case. Meantime, as always, everyone, take very good care of yourselves. We will see you, of course, on the next video. And many thanks to the folks that have come before us who have peppered the way for us. So, too many of you guys to name. In the meantime...
Thank you, ancestors.
And, of course, thank you, all of you that have been viewing with us. We look forward to seeing you guys again in the near future. And as always, after my goodnights for all of you, I said my goodnights for my lady, because 9 years on, I am still in love. Matane Fujin, I love you and I miss you. You dream of me. And of course, everyone else, you take very good care of yourselves. As always, I wish you the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. Until the very next time we get together, everyone, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+ pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.